In his opening press conference, Mac talked about how he was going to kind of depend on you a lot for some advice through the transition. Talk about your conversations since then.
Well, Mac and I communicate, I wouldn't say daily, but almost at least every other day, whether that's over the phone, via, you know, just texting each other back and forth, or in person. And those conversations have gone great. He and I have known each other for quite some time. We have a high level of respect for each other. And it's given us an opportunity to at least bounce around some ideas, for me to also be able to answer questions that he might have, you know, as he's coming up on things, and for him to start to build relationships beyond maybe what's going on, let's just say, within the athletic program. So as an example. We had Mac and myself and Doug Gillen, who's left us now and gone to Appalachian State, went to the Final Four. So we all went to the Final Four together. We went to dinner with Ross Bjork, who's an AD at Ole Miss, and Kim Anderson and stuff. So that's kind of an example of, so with Mac, whether we're talking on the phone, whether we're texting, or we're trying to do some things in person, it's been an ongoing deal, and I think it's gone pretty well. You'd have to ask Mac how it's going, but I think it's going really well.
Do you discuss with him, like, priorities in your mind for the department coming up? And I mean, obviously there's this, you know, the softball complex and the south end zone. I'm sure you guys have had conversations, but are you letting him set his own agenda, or are you kind of helping him along with some bullet points?
Well, certainly, you know, Mac is really talented and has an agenda. I know that he's going to be delivering at a high level too. But at the same time, during the transition process at the beginning of that, what I tried to lay out was, in my opinion, here are the eight, let's say, I'm just using a number, here are the 8 to 10 things I think that are kind of important that you're at least going to need to be familiar with. As an example, you guys heard me talk about the Nike contract. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, that thing was something he was going to have to know, that that's probably a priority, because you want to get that finalized. Possible renegotiation of your multimedia rights agreement. That would be something you'd want to be thinking about. So a variety, the softball stadium, you know, the funding for that and how that's coming into place. So we talked about a few of those things from my opinion standpoint. And so for him, whatever Mac does with that, and however he implements that, if any of it, that's up to him. But I just tried to lay out what I anticipated to be some of the top things that he might want to be looking at.
When he's asking you for advice, what are the main things that he's asking, I guess, or what are the main areas that he's coming to you for?
Oh, it could be something like, okay, so as an example, okay, if we're taking a look at our multimedia rights agreement, what's the window that we would have an opportunity to take a look at that? It may be as specific as that. That's just one example, David. Or it could be just, you know, what's the name of your courtesy car dealer? You know, who's the, you know, I mean, it could be something like that. What is his name? What's his address? I might want to send him a thank you note or whatever. Or it could be just, you know, tell me where your office is going to be on campus so that when I get there, I can come by and see you. So it's a variety of things, some that have been specific, but it's just really a conversation.
Mike, I guess you've had about a month now since maybe a little longer since you announced you're moving on. I guess if you had more time to kind of process, you know, thinking about leaving something you've done for 17 years, and you think there'll be some point where it'll kind of hit you that you're not going to be doing the same thing.
You know, it hasn't hit me completely yet. Have I been able to process it? Yes. You know, I've been processing it as we've gone through. I think Rocky and I, Jake, our son, who's at Purdue, but, you know, I communicate with him every day. I think as a family, you know, we've been able to kind of move in that direction. We still feel, you know, really good about where we're at, probably better today than we did before, just because as you kind of get closer to that. But each time and juncture that we go through, it's just another step in that process emotionally that you kind of have to go through. For me, it's just a me thing. So I'm pretty passionate about what I do. And so as an example of that, trying to be concrete on these, last night we had about 40 student athletes over to our home. So Rocky and I, which is not unusual for us, we have student athletes at our house. And so we had them over for supper last night. And so I know that when they were leaving the house last night, that's emotional for me, because I'm not going to be doing that. In that context, I'll be doing that with students probably, but not with our student athletes. So each one of those steps, my point is, Gabe, is that we become stronger and stronger of where we're at, feeling really good about that as we go along. But there are junctures along the way that still make you kind of step back a little bit. It's a little emotional, but it's getting closer, you know, because the official day when Mac will start is April the 27th. So technically, you know, April 26th is that last day you have that signature authority, and then April 27th.
Mike, Chancellor Lofton appears to be really engaged with athletics, maybe more than Brady Deaton or Chancellor Wallace ever were. What does that mean for Mac going forward and how that connection can work?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's a real positive. And I told Mac this, is that I really enjoy working with Dr. Lofton. I do personally, because of his interest, because of his engagement, because of his visibility, because of his understanding. And so I think that with Mac, I think that will be a great benefit to him, because he has someone that certainly, as we say in our business, he gets it, right? So Dr. Lofton gets it in our business. He understands the priorities of where it ranks within an institution, and he can help you navigate through a variety of things with a real level head. And so with Mac, the one thing I've always been impressed with Dr. Lofton, there's been nothing at all that we've ever discussed or that's come up, any kind of issue that's come up, that Dr. Lofton hasn't been completely steady on all of that and being able to. So that's a great resource to have as a CEO. And I think that with Dr. Lofton, with Mac, I think it's going to be a big asset for him, because he understands it, he gets it, he's engaged, and he's very balanced on his approach.
With the different management styles between him and Chancellor Deaton, I mean, did that make for any sort of transition period at the beginning, or was there an adjustment you had to make to working to a different type of with a different type of person?
I think you always do. I think there's always going to be. I'm very close with Brady personally and professionally, and his wife Ann. You know, we spent a lot of time together when he was the provost and as the chancellor. And so I think when you transition, when you change, it's different, and you have to be able to, you know, not only adapt to that, but you have to appreciate that for what it is. It's no different than how the athletic program is going to transition from, like, me being in this role to Mac. We're going to be different people, but so there was an adjustment period. But certainly it was to me, it was all very positive.
Mike, I think it's harder for media to kind of evaluate athletic directors than it would be for coaches or athletes. After you made the announcement, then you kind of got to be a guest at your own funeral and hear what everyone had to say about you. After that, what was sort of, were the things you thought, I don't, maybe there were some misperceptions about me? I mean, if you had a chance to address maybe how you're portrayed and where people maybe missed or where you feel like they did.
Yeah, I think some of it, Joe, like when some of the stuff I was saying was, boy, I didn't realize Mike was, I wish he would have been more open about who he was personally. That I heard that. Is that what you're saying, kind of as an example? Or there,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the examples. And that was, I was talking to Rocky about that. I said, that's kind of interesting, because I always think I'm pretty open. But in reality, I think I understood what some folks were saying. You know, we wish we'd have known a little bit more about your background. We wish you would have been a little bit more open on that. And so that would have been one of the things I think as I looked at. I think probably another could have been on maybe some issues to me, you know, it was saying, hey, kind of wish Mike would have been a little bit more out front on some of those issues instead of maybe holding back a little bit. I saw that, and that resonated with me a little bit, because I think if you look back on that, you think, you know what, that's right, and I wish I would have been. So there were a couple of those things, maybe being able to open up a little bit more about myself. I had heard that, and I thought, oh, I didn't realize that. And the other one is in some issues, right, some critical issues too, that maybe it would have been better to take, you know, be out front a little bit more than I was.
What are those critical issues you wish you'd have been more up front on?
Oh, that could have been a variety of things, but I certainly think that relative to, here I was in, where was I? Marco Island, Florida, yeah. You know, South Florida, when we have a pretty significant issue going on here on campus. And while I'm aware of everything that's going on, you know, that's one of those things that would have been, in retrospect, that would have been better. And Chad and I talked about that. For me, I wish that I would have been able, look, just get on a plane and get on home and do those things versus continuing to do your presidency and what you're supposed to do there. You know, that to me, that's a miss. Yeah, you know, I should have. So that's an example of one of those, you know. And there are probably others as well, too. I think many years ago, dealing with the Ricky Clemens situation, there was a lot of things around that, for me, I probably could have been out there a little bit more out front, you know, than I was. I mean, you're always there and you're doing the things you got to do. I don't know. I could probably go through a few. But those are two examples.
How tough were those emotionally for you? You know, I mean, handling some of those issues that crop up, and, you know, or the Aaron O'Neill situation, or, you know, Quinn's departure, that kind of stuff. Even all the way back to the decision to part ways with Nolan.
Yeah, I think all of those, you guys, this is a me thing, so I can't speak for other athletic directors. I just speak for me. Those types of issues, they're very emotional, you know, because you're trying to make sure that you're having a steady hand from a leadership standpoint. You're trying to over-communicate is what you're trying to do, and you're trying to be sensitive to those types of issues and how you're dealing with those. So internally, there's a lot of internal stuff you go through, right? There's a lot of sleepless nights that you go through as you're trying to balance those types of issues. So it's emotional. I think it's taxing on you. But I think each one of those that you go through, it's hard to ever hit, you know, it's hard to bat 1,000, you know. And so what you want to be able to do is when you go through those things, and maybe you had a foul ball instead of hitting the single or hitting it the way you needed to, you have to learn from that. Okay, so how do you correct your swing? What are the things that you do? And that, for me, as emotional as those were always a driving force for me, is how do you correct that? So how do you correct that swing, right, after maybe you hit the foul ball on that one? So, but they're very emotional, very difficult, I think, very taxing.
What was the toughest one for you to deal with?
I can't. It'd be hard for me to rank them. I think, though, when it really would be. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a death of a student athlete, and when this point, you're talking about death of another student athlete, former student athlete over here. You're talking about, you know, a legend stepping away, you know, like Coach Stewart. So it'd be hard to rank any of those. Those are all challenging, all very emotional.
My kind of self-assessment, when you look back, what are the one or two things you think, you know, your tenure here will be remembered for, successes? And are there areas that you look back at, not big picture, but maybe specific things that you say you probably should have handled or made different decisions?
Well, on the one, I'll take it in reverse order, Gabe. There's always going to be issues that you wish you would have handled, you know, maybe differently. And again, I think that's that self-assessment. I think from a leadership standpoint, and I'm not saying that for me personally, I'm just talking globally, from a leadership standpoint, the evolution, the constant learning, the constant improvement, and that is such a huge deal that you have to be able to do. And so as you look back, there are a variety of things that you wish you would have handled. You know, looking back, you know, with a different set of experiences, you may have done differently. On the flip side of that, so it'd be hard for me to say these are the ones. It's kind of like when Todd was saying, okay, what are the ones that probably are the most challenging? But on the flip side of that, I think some of the things that I would suggest that I would look at as being pretty successful is I think we've become much more relevant on the national scene, not only in college athletics, but in higher education, because of some of the things, not because of athletics, but because of some of the things that athletics have done. So nationally, I don't believe we were relevant. I mean this, I don't want to say we're irrelevant. I don't think we were as relevant 17 years ago on the national scene. I don't think the brand of Mizzou, I don't think the Tiger logo, I don't think the University of Missouri or Missouri was something that was really overly relevant on the national scene. And I think that over the course of that time, when you see people constantly talking about the University of Missouri, constantly looking at Mizzou, looking at us and how important our AAU ranking is, how important it is for our expansion of our international programs, and how much athletics, I think, has played a part of that, I think to me, that's one of those things that I'm very proud of our students and our program for doing that. I think the academic reputation that we have as an athletic program right now is outstanding. Because of our kids and because of our program and because of our great faculty. Those are the kind of things I think beyond, okay, can they win? This is different than can you win? You know, can you build other facilities and everything? All that's kind of part of it. To me, how much more relevant are we on the national stage? And I would suggest a lot more relevant. And how have we done as far as protecting the academic integrity of this institution and harnessing its strengths? I think our kids have done an amazing job on that.
Now, there's a part of that that I've always kind of wanted to get your story on, and that's obviously the conference switch and getting into the SEC. But what I want to know is there was a point at which we all remember a day over at the Alumni Center waiting to find out what was going on with the Big 12 and things going crazy and it looking like OU and the Texas schools are all going to pack and all this stuff. And I've got a video in my archives talking about how Mizzou would fit into the Big 10. It got a little nuts for a few weeks there. How nervous were you between the time where it starts looking like Big 12's over and the SEC finally came through?
We were really nervous. I mean, that those are those sleepless nights. So we can talk about all these different junctures, right, that we were talking about, these critical components and the things that have gone on. That in itself was amazingly stressful, not Mike Alden, I think for all of us, for Tiger Nation, for all of us, because here we were in, you know, we got this soundbite that came out of Norman, Oklahoma about wallflowers, right? Now I say that here because I've talked about this publicly, right? I've used this in like public speeches I've done around the country. And when that came out, it was like everybody's going, wait a minute, that's not what was just said, like, you know, a couple days ago. So when that happened, then you had a whole bunch of people that were really nervous. All this thing that we've done to try to build a relevant brand, we talked about relevancy, right? What was going to happen? Where were we going to be? I mean, where were we going to be? I mean, was the Big 12 going to continue to exist? Were we going to go here? What about over here? What happens, you know, and especially when they were talking about those five schools, right? Yeah. It was about 60 to 75 days, maybe more than that. Maybe 90 days of unbelievable stress, right? And so many moving parts and so many different things going on. But I think as you look at that, back on that, to me, I look at Brady Deaton. You know, we talked about Brady earlier. I mean, his leadership on that was amazing. Steve Owens, who was involved in that, Phil Hoskins, who was our interim general counsel at that time, a lot of other people. Amazing just to see their, you know, their leadership on that and to just kind of hold everything together. And then at the end of all of it, I think it turned out pretty good. But I was pretty nervous for 90 days.
This might be kind of a silly question, and these people might get mad at me for asking it, but you just, the Missouri versus Missouri, where did that, I mean, you obviously get some grief over that.
I know.
I mean, so like, where does that come from?
I'm going to tell you. So Marianne Knipmeyer, that is my grandmother's maiden name. My grandmother, Marianne Knipmeyer, a family of eight kids, grew up in Lafayette County, right, which is Higginsville and Missouri. So if you're from Higginsville and you were growing up on Lippert Avenue all those years ago, I'm telling you, they pronounced it Missouri. So when I was a little kid, my whole upbringing, I don't want to get too deep into this, but I grew up with a lot of different people, right? So a lot of different people had custody of me when I was kind of coming up. But when I was doing that, my grandmother, who would be with us at certain junctures, always pronounced Missouri, Missouri. And so I'd be walking around, just a little kid, Missouri. And everybody'd say, no, it's Missouri. And I would say, no, because my grandmother said it was Missouri. So it was just kind of ingrained in us. And my father, you know, said it that way. So, yeah, I get a lot of grief on that. But that's where it came from. It came from Marianne Knipmeyer and me growing up and her juncture with me in my life. And that's where it came from. But what I was able to say, at least when I'm speaking, is I say, well, whether you say Missouri or you say Missouri, everybody says Mizzou. So at least we got that right.
Mike, back to the conference realignment stuff, when you write your Arbo and Lofton style book, which I'm sure will be out in a few months, how big a part, I mean, is that, do you think that's what most people would put number one thing on your resume, is being the guy that oversaw Missouri moving conferences?
It may be one, I don't know, I'd give that to other people to make that judgment, but you're asking me personally. I think that move, because I believe what it's going to do for our institution 20 years down the road is just, I mean, it's almost immeasurable. I think it is it's been a huge opportunity, and how we capitalize it on an institution 20 years from now, it's going to say whether, wow, that they really took advantage of, because we know the opportunities that exist with that. I think that'll be something I'm very proud to have been associated with that, because I think it's been great for Mizzou. It's been great for our university, and I think it's really good for the SEC.
Mike, the football program under Gary has been pretty steady over the years. Basketball's been more volatile. Mm-hmm. How, in your opinion, how did the program get to where it is right now, coming off this kind of season, attendance, where it is?
In basketball. Yeah, not football, basketball. You know, I don't know. I constantly look at that and assess that, because I think that, you know, as we look back, you know, Coach Stewart had so much success. And then when that transition, you know, when Quinn came in, I mean, there was an immediate bump on that, right? Immediate bump from recruiting, immediate bump from attendance, immediate bump as far as success was concerned. And then that started to decline. And then when Mike came in, we had stability, and then kind of a growth on that, and that was good. And when Frank came in, there was an immediate and then kind of a decline. And my hope is that when Kim is coming in, you know, taking it from where it's at as he builds that, that there's going to be a more sustained success. Why has that happened? I don't know. I wish I could put my, if I could put my finger on it and knew why it would, was certainly we wouldn't have wanted that to happen. We wouldn't want to have that sustained success. But it's probably a combination of, you know, whether it's recruiting philosophy, whether it's investment philosophy, whether it's, who knows, at some points, maybe an injury or whatever it could be. I'm not, it could be a whole combination of things, but nothing that I've been able to specifically identify. You know, as I look at it with Kim right now, certainly know that he's a Missouri guy, knowing he's committed to this institution, knowing he has great values. It's my hope and my belief, you know, that he'll get this thing stabilized with some consistent things that I think he talked about with you guys maybe last week.
Is there a fair amount of time he should get to be able to do that?
I think so. You know, I believe so. You know, I mean, that's been our at least our process and our kind of MO for all of our coaches, you know, since I've been at Mizzou, is that you want to understand that when you're investing in something, that immediate gratification piece, and that's harder now, Dave. You know, it's not at Mizzou, it's anywhere. That immediate gratification, that immediate cause and effect, right, that immediate return on investment is different today than it was, let's say, X amount of years ago. There's always been pressure to win, always been pressure to perform, always been speed that people want to do it. It's just today, it's almost like at hyper speed. And so from a leadership standpoint, how are you going to make sure that you not only are continuing to invest, but you have to allow those, you know, those things to be able to flourish a little bit? And I would hope that, you know, that that's going to be the case. It's worked well for us in, well, there's football. We talk about football. It's worked well for us in wrestling. It's working well for us, I really believe, in women's basketball. I think what you're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg with Robin, but that's taken her 4 or 5 years to get where we are right now. It's worked really well, I think, in softball. It's working really well for us in swimming and diving and on and on. So at least there are models at Mizzou and around the country where that works. That's a long answer because I'm really passionate about that, because I think it's going to be important that we do that. Know that there's going to continue to be more pain as you kind of go through and then kind of come out of that.
Well, has it been frustrating that Steve, you haven't found more stability with the basketball?
Oh,
league?
Yeah. Yes. You know, because that, again, I'm so, this is a me thing, Steve. So you're asking me personally, yes. I mean, I'm so passionate about what our kids and wanting us to win, right? Wanting our fans to feel really good, wanting our fans to turn out, and you want to have consistency. And when you have a legacy at Mizzou, in the sport of basketball like we do, which is pretty high level performance, right, in our history, you want to make sure that you're part of the team that makes sure not only that you maintain that, but you grow on that. And so to see it go like what Dave was saying, like here, kind of a more of a like a line, like that's extremely frustrating, right? It's been, you know, it's been frustrating for me. So
that's the one program that I guess people who are critical of your tenure would say it's been pretty successful across the board, but they don't think the basketball program has been successful. Do you think you have, you know, handled that program well, or are there things that you should have done along the way that could have changed that?
Always things you could have done along the way that could have changed that. I believe that. There's no question, right? I think you have to believe that, right? There's a multitude of things. But I think the one thing is the challenging part, the term consistency is what is lacking. What we have in men's basketball, there's not been consistency. Remember when Quinn got that to the Elite Eight, right? So we beat whatever UCLA, we lose to Oklahoma, just to miss him getting to the Final Four. You're kind of going on that trajectory. What did we do to capitalize on that? What did we do to try to make sure that we were capitalizing on that moment? And we didn't, for, I don't know, there could be a whole bunch of reasons. So then all of a sudden Mike comes in. And then Mike comes in, and he lends that stability. He has a, you know, a different style, which is fine. Whatever that is, as far as the game, I'm talking about the game, X's and O's. I don't get into that as much. But then we have some success. We get to an Elite Eight, but his tenure, you know, we wish would have been longer, but then he decides he's going to go to Arkansas. Okay, so we go here. So then we go, and then Frank comes in, and then boom, right, he takes it, and we're going National Coach of the Year, 30 and whatever we were. Okay, how are we capitalizing on that? And so we didn't, you know, as we were, you know, grabbing and trying to fill holes and whatever our recruiting and the different things we were doing, it didn't allow us for that sustained part of it. Well, that's more than you wanted. But you guys, I have spent a lot of days and a lot of minutes and a lot of nights on trying to figure how can we make sure that we get a consistency with what we're doing in men's basketball. It's tough to be able to do, but it can happen, it will happen at Mizzou. And I think that Mac, I think Kim, I think their team are going to be able to do it, but it's going to take, I don't want to say time being like decades here, it's going to take some time though and a lot of focus in on some critical areas.
Mike, specifically with Frank and the Miami investigation, how much do you feel like that hampered what he was able to do? And in retrospect, should you have reacted to that?
Well, first of all, I think in the first part of that is, no, it absolutely. You know, I mean, when you're sitting there and you have that investigation going on at Miami, from a recruiting standpoint and a lot of area standpoint, there's always questions, right? Okay, what's going to happen in this particular, place, and how is that going to impact me? If I'm a prospective student athlete, a prospective parent, whatever that may be. And that was a lot of work, you know. I was involved quite a bit in that from, meeting with kids and meeting with parents and our staff and everything. But I think going back, we certainly did our due diligence, and we were excited when we brought Frank here, and I think he did some good things while he was at Mizzou. I think we our staff, I think did a really good job as far as coordinating, communicating, and handling whatever ancillary role we would have had in that investigation. But no, I think we handled as best we could, and I think we did our due diligence. And
you talked about the patience with coaches, and obviously there are several coaches that now have been here for a very long time and are very successful that have been on the hot seat, and the fact that that's harder to do now. A football coach at a major university having a losing season in three of his first four seasons, being there 17 years, that's not going to happen that much. What are some other ways in which college athletics at the level we're talking about have changed over your 17 years that maybe have been difficult for you or concerning for you?
I think escalating, well, which probably ties into what you're saying, sure. the lack of patience. I think escalating salaries absolutely have impacted college sport in a lot of ways. You know, I think where is that going? How is that happening? What's the perception of that? How does that impact your fan base? What are their fees? So that's gonna impact the patience.
Right.
But it's also gonna impact, I think, the, it's kind of like, it's almost like the, I don't want to say esprit de corps, that's the wrong term, but also probably the connection that fans in the day would feel with an entire program. Sometimes when you're separating some of the leaders of those programs at an income level that many of them could never even imagine having, it becomes more challenging. I think that's one of those. So I think the salary, where that's heading, how that's going to impact the fan base. I think certainly the plethora of opportunities that people have to be able to see content, live content on mobile devices is a huge issue. So where is that going? How is that changing? Because it's different today, right? To be able to try to fill that football stadium or that basketball arena, it's different, or baseball, it's different today than it was 15 years ago. It just is, you know, and when I can sit and be anywhere I want with that puppy right there and know exactly what's going on with a baseball game, maybe I'll go to the game, maybe I won't go to the game. So what are we doing in college athletics to do that? I think that's a change. I think I think what we're seeing right now from the leadership of the NCAA, the leadership of conferences, and you know, the lawsuits that are out there, the likeness kind of issues that we have going on, the full cost of attendance, all of these different kinds of things. How are we trying to manage our day-to-day deal, making sure our kids are eating well and doing the things they need to be doing while at the same time handling all of these issues that are going to continue to come at us? So whether it's salaries, whether it's the plethora of opportunities for people to watch things on mobile devices and not attend games, which is impacting all of us, whether it has to do with, you know, the expansion of you know, expenses or lawsuits or whatever they are, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on out there. That's a long answer. I hope I answered it.
Do you feel like there's a way for student athletes to get compensated and still maintain the model that kind of the NCAA wants to? I mean, is there a way that, I guess, both sides can get what they want, or is it kind of an all or nothing proposition?
No, I don't, in my opinion, I don't ever see a model that exists where you would pay, you would make a student athlete an employee. I just don't see that model. I don't think that works in amateur sport. I understand. I see all the arguments from a variety of people that says, well, yes, it can because this is your requirement of people. Are there more things we can do for our kids? There are. We're already doing that right now. And I'm not talking about just the full cost of attendance. And I'm not just talking about the meals. I'm talking about, you know, where our kids travel to away contests and the different types of opportunities they have for healthcare and the improvements of their experience as a student. I think there's a lot more that we can continue to do. But for me to be able to step from that and say, okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to have, you know, that young man become an employee of ours and put him on the payroll, I don't see that model as being a workable deal. You know, I just don't. That's just me. You're asking my opinion. This is my opinion.
Last year, Shabazz Napier made a big, you know, talked about going hungry. So, have you actually had athletes who've come to you and said, Mike, I can't even afford to eat, that kind of thing?
No. When I heard that young man, I know his name, but I'll just say that young man, make that comment, I couldn't believe it. Right? I'm pretty familiar with the University of Connecticut program. I know exactly how Ward Manuel runs that program and how those coaches do. For a student athlete to say, I go hungry because there's no way. I've never heard one of our kids say that. And if we did, you know what, then that's on us. And we need to find a way to be able to do that. The NCAA doesn't have to change that. We could have been, well, if that was the case there, then I'm sure there could have been things they were doing to be able to assist that young man. But no, that has not happened with me.
So, the full cost of attendance, I mean, is it necessary so that kids have the basic necessities, or is it just kind of an extra benefit in your mind?
No, I think it helps, and it should be for the necessities. And I said this before, you know, that when a kid, like when Jake goes to Purdue, and they sat with us and said, okay, this is how much it's going to cost him to go to school. And I said, okay, now wait a minute here. Tuition, fees, books, room and board adds up to this number. What's this number? Why are you giving me this number as a parent? And they said, because that's what's going to cost him to go to school, to get home to see you twice, have a little spending money in his pocket. So I'm familiar with the full cost of attendance. And most of us that have kids or family members or involved in higher education know that. And so we're used to that. So what I think it does for your student athletes, which we're requiring them to do so much stuff, is it does give them an extra, you know, a little bit of money to be able to get that pizza or to go home and see their families. And I don't think it's a luxury. I think it's a necessity, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Mike, you were talking earlier about the differences between now and when you took the job, which was two lifetimes ago, being an AD. What do you think the biggest difference will be, just say not even 17 years, but 10 years for a guy in your job?
I think that, okay, I am concerned that a man or woman in my job is going to be spending less time with their student athletes. I do. I think that they're going to be spending less time on working on efforts to be able to work directly with your student athletes to help them grow as men and women, because I think you're going to be drawn into more commercialized activity that you're going to have to be involved with. I mean, as an AD, you're going to have to be. You're going to be involved with more national type of issues, more legal type of issues, right? And so I think that when you're looking at that, and I've watched that, Sam, over the course of this time, I've spent less and less time. It's not like I want to hang out in the dining hall all day long, but it's kind of nice once in a while to stop and see your kids, right? But more and more time is taken up with whether they're legal issues, whether it have to do with commercial type of issues, whether it has to do with national type of issues, and different things that are pulling ADs away from what they do on a daily basis. So when they talk about a corporate exec, you are a corporate exec, right? It's just going to be one that's going to be probably less connected with the day-to-day workforce that you have, which is your student athletes and your staff and things like that. I think that's going to be much more challenging. I think that the need for you to be able to generate additional monies is going to be greater. It's always been great, but it's going to be greater than ever. That you're going to see a tendency for people in this role to fall back on saying the SEC network, the Big Ten network, the Pac-12 network, those things. Hey, look at this additional revenue coming. So they're going to step back for a little while, and they're going to think, boy, this is really good. Now we're in the black instead of in the red. And what's going to happen is 2 or 3 years down the road, they're going to spend all that money. Some way, they're going to spend it. And then they're going to, holy cow, now I got to generate even more. That's going to be so much more challenging because they're going to be taking a step back and they're going to have to gain some ground on that. And I just think the last piece of it is this is a, I mean, this is a 24/7 job. Right, but you guys have that too. Come on, you guys are on call all the time. You know that. I mean, you, if that phone hits you at 2 in the morning and something's coming up, you're going to work. Well, it's the same thing right here. It's just with the pace and the demands that go along with this particular position, I see less and less ADs being at places like Joe Castiglione is at Oklahoma for 17 years. Ron Wellman's at Wake Forest for whatever. Chris Hill's, or Jeremy Foley, wherever, whatever, at Florida. Chris Hill, whatever, at Utah. Me, whatever, at Mizzou. I see less and less ADs being able to do that for, because of impatience, because of these other issues that we're dealing with, your disconnect from your student athletes on a regular basis, and the pace is going to pick up even more. You get to that, you know, factor where it's like, enough.
For those how reasons, how much of what we're talking about is like new since you, like in the last 17, or how much of it is like an amplification of things that maybe were this big when you got hired?
I think it's more the amplification side. Those issues were there, right? So your draw away from your kids was maybe there. The fundraising component was there. The legal issues were there. They've just been amplified, and they've multiplied. They've been like an amoeba, right? They keep subdividing. So all of a sudden you got this thing, and then this amoeba. It's like, uh-oh, now I've got, instead of this one issue, this legal issue I'm dealing with, now that thing's subdivided five times, now I got five of them. And what that does is that just creates, instead of spending, you know, 5 hours on that particular project for a week, it's 25 hours because you got five of those projects. So I don't think it's the issues. I think those issues existed even, you know, well before I got here. Those types of, it's just they've been amplified. And because of the speed, right? It's almost like warp speed right now, how you're trying to respond to things. It's been amplified because of that. You guys, this thing, you guys live on them, right? We all live on them. I live on them. And it's just the responsiveness that all of us have to have. All of us have to have. I mean, it's the same thing. It's got to be in your profession, too. I mean, the speed of how you have to respond to an issue is different. The issues are always there. It's just been amplified because of the speed that you have to respond.
For those reasons that you mentioned, commercialization and how you're concerned about that, is that part of the reason why you decided to step down at this time?
No, it wasn't. You know, I mean, No, it wasn't like a major issue. Is that something that concerns me? Yeah, I mean, it really is, because I think that part of the reason that you do what you do, hopefully you do what you do, is because you want to spend time with your kids and you want to spend time with your coaches and you want to be at athletic events and you want to be part of all the stuff and you want to help with that strategy. And so when you're not able to do it as much, it certainly isn't nearly as rewarding at some points. But no, it wasn't like the issue of why I would have. It was. This whole thing was all part of our plan. And I talked about this, you guys, before. And I don't want to overplay this. I don't want to say overplay, oversay this. But there is a faith for us. This is our family. There is a faith component that was part of that process. There is. And that's just us, right? That's the Alden family. That's us. And so I wasn't suggesting that to other people. That's just for me. But the other part of that was I said this to a lot of people I know. Sandy would be one. He would be one. There's others. I never wanted to be an AD. I never wanted to be an AD when I was 60 years old, ever. I don't know why. It just hit me in my head. I just never wanted to do this. I always wanted to get back in the classroom. I always wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to look at what was the right time to be able to step away. And frankly, this is, I'm giving you a lot more than you wanted, right? I never, ever wanted to be an AD anywhere but Mizzou. I didn't. And so people are saying, okay, wait a minute, what about this? Or you step away, you're going to get some phone calls. And, you know, those have happened, which is fine. No, I mean, this is the place I wanted to do it. I wanted to do it for a certain period of time. Our personal faith helped drive that decision. It wasn't about commercialization. But those things are factors in it. But
you said that people have contacted you about other AD jobs.
You always get calls. Yeah, those kind of things happen all the time.
Would you have any interest in, say, conference-level administrator jobs, or do you all in on being a teacher and that's all you want to do the rest of your life?
You know, I don't have an interest in conference level jobs. I don't. My focus is, I really am looking forward to my opportunity in the College of Education. You know, I currently have an office over at the Trulass College of Business, which is kind of cool. So I'm kind of a nomad. I'm moving around here a little bit. And that international effort, Joe, you know, that we talked about, that to me is where I'm really driven right now. I'm getting back to your question. I know what your question is. Joe, you guys all probably give me a hard time. I probably talk way more than you want when you ask a question. I keep talking, and I don't mean to do that, but that's just me. But no, I mean, I think that certainly, I never see myself being an athletic director. This is the only place I want to be an AD. I will never be an AD again. You can say, I will never be an AD again, right? I don't have an interest in working at a conference level and don't see myself in that area. Are there other areas that could come up that I don't even know about? Sure, there could be. But for me, I'm really looking forward to being on the academic side on things. But I don't see the AD thing or a conference level thing.
Mike, big picture, a lot of your programs have had a lot of success. Obviously, your two major programs, neither one of them has won a conference title in 20 years at least. Is there anything from an administrative point, I mean, I'm not saying don't throw an interception here, change a call here, whatever, but from an administrative point of view that you think maybe can be done that has kept Missouri from really good to winning conference titles on a regular basis?
You know, I can't think of anything specifically on that, Gabe. I will tell you, my opinion on that is, you know, I absolutely hear what you're saying. In my opinion, I just think Mizzou needs to keep doing what they're doing, and that domino is going to fall. I just believe that. I just think we've gained so much. We're so close on a variety of sports, and I think that you got to continue to evaluate it. What are some of the areas that you can continue to improve on? But I think you just got to stay the course and keep it. That's my opinion. I don't think there's any drastic need for any drastic changes on that. So how do you get that conference championship in football? How do you get to Atlanta and win that championship game? I think you just got to keep doing what you're doing. How do you win the regular season conference championship in men's basketball or the tournament? Let's just say the regular season. I think you guys got to do what you're doing, you know. But I do believe that domino is going to fall, you know.
Speaking of programs that have had some problems over the years, obviously in recent weeks it looks like there may be something of a turnaround going on. But talk about what's going on with baseball, and in particular with the attendance issue, because Mizzou's way behind everybody else in the SEC in attendance.
Well, let's start with the first part of that. I think that when we made the move to the SEC, if you think about, and I know you guys have looked at this, our success in baseball in the Big 12, you know, over, you know, last 8 or 9 years in the Big 12, it's pretty good, right? It's pretty good. And I think when we made that shift to the SEC, there were a couple of factors here. First, I'm not sure, and Tim would have to be able to answer this more, I'm not sure where we were from a squad standpoint, how many kids off of that last Big 12 team where we won the Big 12 tournament the year before we went in the SEC, how many of those kids were still there, how many came, what his recruiting was looking like. The intersection, I know he had a few staff that turned over as well too. But the other piece of this, which I think is more important than any of this, when we went to the SEC, everybody and their brother talked about football. Everybody talked about football, right? And football, there's no question, it's a big league for that. But in my opinion, right now, gymnastics is as good as there is in the country, swimming and diving, track and field, you know, softball, I mean, on and on. I think that the gap between where we were and what we were doing to the SEC was the greatest in the sport of baseball. I think it's the greatest. I mean, when you go to LSU and see what they're doing, South Carolina, Florida, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, I mean, I can go on and on. I think that it has taken, and we're getting some traction this year. Now, you got to have consistency, though, right? We got to have consistency. We know that. But it's taken probably longer for us to adjust in baseball, maybe, than any other sport. It's not because we got great kids. I think our Tim does a terrific job. But I think that, and I think from a fan standpoint, our crowds have been better, which is great, right? We had a really good crowd. It wasn't last weekend because we were in Tennessee. It was the weekend before that. We had a really good crowd Friday, really good crowd on Saturday. But I think what we need to focus on is continuing to win, which we have, continuing to try to fill this place. Now, this stadium, the situation of this stadium, where it's situated is what mm-hmm. I mean, it can be kind of challenging, you know, from a parking standpoint and traversing the hill. So we've tried to have shuttles and all those other kind of things. So I think you got to continue to navigate how can you make it even more convenient, knowing your stadium is going to be right there. I'm not putting anything else out there. Your baseball stadium staying right there. How are you going to make it even more easier for your fans to get there? I think that's a big issue. And I think when you do that, you're going to keep filling that place. You know, Vanderbilt seats, what, 3,000?
Right.
But they fill it every game. right? Fill it every game. Mm-hmm. And they're right there in the middle of Nashville. And that's not the easiest place to park either. So how do we take some of those examples? And they win at a high level, I get it. But how do we take some of those examples to be able to fill this place? And I think Mac and his team will be able to do that.
Is that a worry for you in the conference switch, just the fact that, you know, football gets a lot of attention and baseball, like you mentioned, but have you been satisfied with how everything is assimilated? Has it gone better or worse than you expected?
I think it's gone better than what we thought. I mean, but we didn't know what to think. I think it has gone better. I think our kids have really embraced the move to the SEC, which to me was the most important thing, right? How do your student athletes, first of all, some people say, well, how do your fans? That should be the most important thing. I really think the ones that are performing, the ones that are playing, those are the ones you got to have. And our kids love it. Our kids love that brand, that badge called the SEC. They talk about that all the time. And I think the reason it's adjusted better, the expectations our gymnasts have of themselves today is much higher because they've embraced the move in there. And we swimming and diving, same thing, right? So I think it's gone better than expected. But again, when somebody say, what did you expect? Well, it's kind of hard to say what you expected because you knew you were just stepping into a different world.
Any thoughts on Tim's situation? You were talking about a little bit. I mean, obviously, when you leave, we all kind of know he's in the last year of his contract, likely a win or else situation. I mean, you leaving and the situation he is in at that point.
Well, I mean, for I think for Tim, you know, he's been our head baseball coach for 20 years. I think 21 years. I think this is his 21st year. And he's done a really good job for us at Mizzou. And I think that gives Mac an opportunity and Tim an opportunity to get together, to build their relationship, and hopefully to continue to build this thing going forward. But, you know, I have a lot of confidence in Tim Jamison and what he's been able to do. And I also have a lot of confidence, frankly, in Mac Rhodes, right, in a leadership standpoint. And I think that's a good opportunity for those guys to get together, see the successes we're having in baseball, which we are right now, knowing what our history has been, and allow those guys to put a plan together going forward. So it's kind of a general answer for you, Gabe. But I am looking forward to those guys getting together when they get.
Sort of often mentioned kind of out of the blue that he wanted to add men's tennis, which I hadn't heard much enthusiasm for the previous 17 years. What is your thoughts on that, and why do you think he wants to add? And what also, as a second part, would you have to then add a women's sport?
Well, first of all, I certainly heard Chancellor Lofton's comments and knew that. He had mentioned that to me before, so, you know, privately, like when we were talking. I think, to me, we have 20 sport programs here at Mizzou. And there are some schools in the SEC that they have less than 20 sport programs. There are some schools in the SEC that don't have volleyball. There are some schools in the SEC that don't have softball. And in our league, that's a high, those are two high-profile sports. And I think, at least for me, what we need to do, in my opinion, what we need to do, and I've always said this, we've got to continue to invest in those 20 sport, before we consider anything else, we've got to keep investing in those 20 to make them, all of them, relevant on the national scene. How are we going to get women's tennis up to a point where they're competing regularly in the SEC championships? How are we going to get, women's golf regularly competing in the SEC men's golf every year in the SEC How do you keep investing in those so that you can make sure this department is consistently in the top 25 in the Director's Cup standings, which currently we are, which I'm saying that because at least we're really proud because that was something we've worked really hard on. So to me, that's a roundabout answer to say, I think you got to really focus on making sure that before you start adding to the table, you know, to your dinner plate, you need to make sure you got all those other items on your dinner plate, you know, in good shape. Now, I do think, relative to the opportunities for men and women at Mizzou, we've got to make sure that we're maximizing the opportunities for our women here and our men. But I think that if you start taking a look at adding men's sports in the NCAA now, absolutely, you need to be looking at adding women's opportunities too. So there is absolutely a cause and effect relationship here. That if a school decides that they're going to do something here, which is fine if they do, then they're going to have to turn around and like immediately have a plan in place to be able to add something else. Now, okay, and then what do you do? So as you grow this is a long answer, but I think I'm pretty good here. Okay. as you grow those resources, and which has been great, you guys, our budget, not this year, but next year, it'll be $100 million, right? So Max coming in, it's going to be about $95 million in FY16. It'll be over $100 million in the following year. What would it be? FY17. Okay, Joe. So you've got 20 sport programs. That 17 years ago, you had 20 sport programs and $13.7 million. 18 years later, by the time you get there, it's going to be about $100 million for those 20 sport programs. And you've got to keep investing in those because the people you're competing against have $150 million. So when you start adding things to that, what's that's going to do is it's going to obviously take away from some of the investments that you're doing some other things. So I think it can be really challenging. I applaud, you know, the interest and certainly support, you know, anything that Dr. Lofton or folks think we need to do, but there will be a cause and effect on something like it if that's, you know, the direction they end up going.
Do you have an idea on the SEC network what that money's in?
No. I wish I did. I'll tell you what, it is our leadership of the SEC is terrific. The one thing though is all that information is really held very tight, and then we'll probably learn more about that. Well, Mac will learn more about that probably next month. Sandy, he goes to Destin at the end of, probably in Destin. I think they'll know more about it in Destin, which is the end of May.
Mike, you were just talking about the budgets. What was the budget the last year of the Big 12?
I know that. I just don't know that. But I know Tim Hickman knows that. So, Sam, I know that. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. The conference revenue distribution and the total budget, Tim Hickman would have that for the FY 12 year. I just don't remember what it is off the top of my head.
I think it was like 61.
Yeah.
I think the revenue was like
61.
The revenue was like 61 and the budget was like 70.
I'll check
8 or 79.
So we'll have that for you. So this year, you know, the we'll finish this year probably with a reserve. We'll be able to put, I'm ballparking this, you guys, and I'll lowball it. So I want to make sure you never overpromise, but we'll have a probably $4 million that we'll be able to put in reserve at the end of this year. Pretty significant, right? So our reserve was about 400,000 when we started here. It'll be about 14.5 million, you know, which is really good because you got to have that rainy day fund. It's just like all of our personal, our home finances. We're always supposed to have a little money, right, over here, but the importance of making sure you have money set aside is going to be really good. And then as we project our budget, was Mac and that team, we've already have our budget approved for next year, right? As he enters that budget next year, that's why we know it's going to be around $95 million. And so you should have a positive cash flow of several million, you know, hopefully at the end of next year too, which is good.
There's 64, then 50, and then 76.
Oh, there you go. So he's got it all right. Wow. Here. So Sam, when you need it, I don't know. He's got it. There it is. It looks good to me.
Google bless us all.
Back to kind of a national governance level. With all this, I mean, all these money coming into so many programs, do you feel like there is a move towards more fiscal responsibility, or is it just kind of a, I don't know, kill what you eat, like Ponsky said that one time? Yeah. I mean, is there, with all this money, is there more responsibility, or are people just kind of, you know,
I hope. I hope. Because I think the thing is that our abilities, like at Mizzou, we had to wean ourselves off of getting subsidized by the institution. So all those years ago, we were subsidized of the 13.7. We didn't generate all that 13.7. A lot of that came from from the main coffers of the campus. So I think as you see these budgets grow, I think it's critically important that athletic programs hopefully not only are at a point where they're self-sustaining, particularly at the 65, but how are they also being able to kick back exposure and revenue towards main campus initiatives as well too. So I think that fiscal responsibility is one where I think the budgeting process, the resources coming in, but also resource allocation is going to be much more ingrained in the overall campus discussions going forward than it has before in the past. A lot of times you'd have an athletic program, they're over here, okay, you're generating your own budget, you do whatever you want with all of that kind of stuff, and hopefully don't call me for money. I think it's going to be much more inclusive now. I know it will be at Mizzou, but I think you're going to see that a lot more, so that it'll be much more fiscally responsible and supportive of what they're trying to do for the campus. That's my opinion, so, and my hope, actually.
Mike, with regard to coaching salaries, I mean, do you feel like the rate that they've increased, has that been responsible? I mean, when you hired Mike Anderson his first year, I think he made $800,000 and he was in the middle of the pack in the Big 12. Tim Anderson, $1.1 million and is, you know, toward the bottom of the SEC in just a short period of time. Has that growth made sense?
You know, first of all, we know it's market driven. But in answer to your question, do I think it's made sense? No, I don't. I don't. People will say, well, what do you mean? I mean, it's hard for anybody. It's hard to see, you know, a 4 times, 3 times increase in whatever any of us are making over the course of, let's say, 5 years. I mean, that's kind of a hard thing to understand. So, but I think, you know, you hate to keep saying this, the marketplace is going to dictate what the consumer and the public is willing to accept. And currently, right now, for the most part, I think folks have accepted the fact that there are some positions that pay at a high level. But I'm not sure if we're at a tipping point. You know, Malcolm Gladwell writes that book, you know, called The Tipping Point, where we talk about critical junctures, and we may be approaching that. Because when you talk about fiscal responsibility, really, you're talking about trying to do all these great things for our faculty and everybody on campus, and you have isolated incidents where you have this anomaly way out here. It's hard for, you know, it's hard for you to continue to justify that, you know. But I think you're getting close to a tip. In my opinion, I think you're getting close to a tipping point.
During conference realignment, DeLoss Dutt made the comment that, you know, an average year for Texas is a great year for Missouri.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you could disprove
I do
that?
Remember that.
Do you feel like you guys disproved that at all, or did you address maybe the progress you felt you guys made?
I do remember that. Because I remember Sandy was with me. Because I made a call. I was kind of hoping, you know, could fill me in on this comment, and sent a text and made another call, and I got nothing back other than this matzo ball that was kind of put out there. And so personally, you know, I was really disappointed in that, because I saw no validity in that. Secondly, I saw no need for that. Why would you pick out a school and just throw that thing out there like that? I mean, to me, that was an arrogant comment, and it was certainly, in my opinion, not valid. And what I've been particularly pleased with, at least in my opinion, is over the course of time since that comment was made, I think the Mizzou Tigers have done pretty darn well. And I'm sure the Longhorns have done fine. I really don't know, because I don't really pay attention to them. I only pay attention to Mizzou, and I'm pretty proud with how our kids have performed. So after that comment came out, I think that our kids in our program have done a very good job. Again, I'm not sure how Texas has done, but I think we've done pretty good. How about that?
They have not done as well.
That was that was maybe kind of a reflection of how a lot of people felt in the Big 12 maybe felt about Mizzou at the time. Not that particular comment, but just anger. Have you noticed any thawing in the last 3 years amongst Big 12 schools, and maybe if you could touch on particularly Kansas?
I think so. I think that that folks, the more time that goes between our leaving the Big 12, right? I know that. We made that decision to go to the SEC. But us making that decision, I think the more time that goes along, I think, and the Big 12 is doing great, and Bob Bowlesby is doing a terrific job with them. I think the more time that goes, the lesser that, I mean, the more that wound heals. And I think that I'm at least sensing that. I know all the ADs in the Big 12, all of them. And, I mean, we all know each other pretty well. And I'm hoping that in the not too distant future, you're going to see more opportunity. Now, whether that is the University of Kansas or other schools, I don't know. But I think you're going to see more opportunities for Mizzou and the Big 12 to compete on a certain level. I think part of it, though, that's going to help on that. This is a personal opinion. You didn't ask this. I think my exit is going to help part of that. I really do. Because I think that it's not about me personally, but I think as you have changing of things, I think Dr. Lofton's entrance has been a really good thing. I think, because for that type of issue, because it's going to help that thawing. I think Mac will help that thawing, because there's not a lot of history of those people that were part of all of that with the move. So I'm sensing it. I feel much better about it. And I think in the not too distant future that we'll kind of see some opportunities come out there. I hope.
Do you have any regrets about not the move at all, but the way that it happened and the relationships that were wounded as you put it?
I don't know about... It was such a tight time window, Sam, for everything. Do you wish that you could have sat down with everybody and their brother, right? Because you have good relationships with all these guys and say, hey, look, let me talk to you about all these things that are trying to take place that we're going through and machinations that are taking place on our campus or whatever. You wish you could have an opportunity to do that, but you're not able to do that, right? So whether they're confidentiality issues or understandings or memorandum, different things that you're saying, look, you gotta like make sure that you keep everything locked down. In those types of deals, that's tough because you're looking at people that are acquaintances of yours, friends of yours, that you want to be able to share more with them that you could have been able to share. I don't know about regrets. It's more about you wish you would have had an opportunity to be more inclusive in those discussions, and that just wasn't possible.
Mike, as long as we're being honest with your opinions about what other people might have said along the way, it wouldn't be a Missouri press conference without asking. I guess just personally, are you disappointed in the fact that the Missouri-Kansas thing has been put on hold? And if Kansas doesn't agree to play, can Missouri ever, from a fan standpoint, really replace that rivalry?
Well, am I disappointed? Yes. Because I think, again, and I've said this before, you know, Gabe, in the heat of the moment, right, I understand when in the heat of the moment where you're making decisions that because you're ticked, you're upset, your whatever the term is you may want to use. But I think that when you step back away from that heat of the moment, when you take a look at 100 years of history, you're making a decision that's a generational type of decision. And I just think that you can be upset, you can be ticked, you can be whatever, but we're making decisions for decades of people before us and decades of people after us that you hope that over the course of some time that you'll be able to rekindle. I mean, I see the same thing at Texas and Texas A&M. So let's use another school. I really do. I mean, that is an amazing rivalry in this country. And by virtue of the fact of, you know, in particular one school in that state saying we'll never play those guys again, I get it at that point. But over the course of time, wouldn't it be great if Texas and Texas A&M could play every year again? Wouldn't it be great if Mizzou and Kansas could play every year again? And to me, if that can happen again, I think that rivalry will be greater than ever. I think it'll be greater than ever. I think that's a great thing to be able to do. So I'm hoping. But
sure. Charlie Strong and Kevin Sumlin want the Texas.
Look at that. Circuit. Charlie Strong, Kevin Sumlin want Texas and Texas A&M. What's the holdup? Well, there you go. So.
And I mean, let's say that. You know, they don't play for... I mean, how long does it take for that not to be a rivalry anymore? And is there somebody on your schedule? I understand it's a rivalry with Arkansas, right. But does that ever replace what the Kansas rivalry was?
First of all, I don't know how long that can go without... Again, because what's happening now is we haven't played for, what, 3 years? Well, if you go 20 years, I mean, you're talking about a generation of people that you can talk all you want about 20 years ago, but you know, you'll have people saying, who cares? I mean, we never played those guys. So I think you're gonna hit a window of time where you're gonna have to do that, or it's not gonna be as, and we use that term again, relevant as it has before in the past. Are there other people that I don't know. You're talking about 100 years and more than just athletics history here, right? You're talking about, you know, U.S. history that were part of that as well too. So I don't know if you can ever replace that at all. I think you can develop other rivalries. I think they could certainly have a lot of energy and enthusiasm, but you can't replace U.S. history. You can't replace, you know, 100 years worth of, you know, of competition and things like that. But if you go too long, again, it becomes, you're going to have a generation of folks that say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, we'll need to start wrapping this part of it up so I can give our TV folks some time here. So if we can maybe go a couple more.
Mike, how much longer do you think, just in your opinion, to hear your coaches here?
I don't know. Probably a long time, I think. You know, I mean, he, in my opinion, I mean, he's at the top of his game right now. He's got a great staff. Facilities continue to improve here. I think his new boss, in my opinion, I think he's great. I think so. He's going to have another partner that's going to be, I think, have the same set of glasses that Gary has as well, too. He's in great shape, great energy. So I'm hoping, frankly, I'm hoping from Mizzou's standpoint he goes a long time. I'm hoping, because I think he's done amazing things here, and I hope he does it for a long time. But how long, I don't have any idea.
Mike, you mentioned a while back about the idea of athletic directors in modern times sort of being faced with commercial and legal issues that they had in the past. Has that, in your desire to reconnect with kids, has that sort of been one of the impetuses besides your desire to move back towards education?
Yeah, a little bit, and we talked about that a little bit. And this is just a driver for me. I love being with students. I mean, I love it. I love being with them every day. And so part of my desire, knowing I was drawn more and more away from working with our student athletes, knowing I always wanted to go back into the classroom, to me, I know this will give me an opportunity to do that. I know it will give me an opportunity to do that on a U.S. standpoint, so on a national, and then also on an international level. And that's something that really, you know, it drives me, it motivates me, it pumps me. I have a lot of passion. And so that would be one of the components. Gives me a chance to reconnect more with our students on a direct level.
I actually had a question for Sandy, if that's okay. Well, I guess just what's the mood been like around the office these last couple months, you know, in this time of transition and obviously saying goodbye to one boss and welcoming a new one, things like that?
It's getting better. It was a little awkward at first. It's hard when you've had that long relationship with someone that you work that close to. But I think department-wide, everyone's felt that because Mike's got set. I mean, he knows everyone's name. He knows every student athlete's name. He knows them, and he doesn't just know their name. He knows. He knows us. Get emotional.
But she's done. I'm interrupting, so. Because she's, I think, you know, Chad can even say more. She's done a great job. You guys got to imagine, it's got to be challenging. Every day, Sandy and I are together every day. It's very similar. Chad and I are together a ton. But we're together every day. And when you have an executive assistant, whatever that may mean, but your partner, right, here, I mean, we spend so much time together, and they know every move that you're making. They schedule everything. They know how to be able to filter stuff. They know how to be able to connect you in certain ways. They know how to be able to protect you. Not protect you, you got to have it. But, you know, I mean, if there's a day that, okay, he better not have any meetings this day, whatever they may be. So the relationship she's been able to build with the public, with the media, with our student athletes, with our staff and everything, it's extraordinary. But the constant on that has been us. And so when you have that and you have that relationship, it's very similar to Chad, you know, that can be kind of tough, because all of a sudden it's like, okay, you're linked for all these years, you do all the stuff together, and so there's this new dude coming in, and so how do you balance it? How did I do, Sandy? Did I stretch
very
it
good.
Out long
thank
enough
you.
For you?
Yes, thank
okay.
you. And
that
that's
purposeful.
Part of why he's so wonderful, because he is going to cover that. But I think one thing that everyone was so surprised that he was going to go to the College of Education. I don't think most of our staff were surprised, because we see him every single day teaching. That's just who he is. I don't think it's a coincidence that we have, what's number 10, people that work for Mike that are ADs across the nation now, and probably hundreds more that are working their way to be an AD. It's just a natural course. I just wasn't surprised. I was surprised at the timing somewhat, but not surprised at the path he's going to take.
Along those lines, the world of academic support for the student athlete has evolved a lot over the past 17 years, but talk about the support you've gotten from the professor in the classroom, the faculty at Mizzou in general.
You guys, I'm telling you, so our deans, all of our deans, our faculty in general on our campus specifically, really our ability to be able to build, you know, cross-campus relationships and connections, I mean, has been outstanding. And that much of that has to do certainly with our student athletes, who I think continue to elevate their performance, which they need to do, but it's also been our faculty and their willingness to be able to work in an environment where they're constantly connected towards what we're trying to do in athletics with the kind of travel schedules we have and all those other types of things. I think our faculty have been tremendous. But that's been a thoughtful and a very specific effort on behalf, I think, of our faculty, but also of Tammy Chivas and Brian Maggard and our student athletes and our coaches and stuff. But I really like those links that we've built, and that's got to be a constant. You got to continue to build those on a regular basis. Faculty are the lifeblood of an institution, right? So you got your students, and they're the lifeblood. And so how can we continue to build those relationships? And I think our kids, our coaches, and our staff have done a good job, and I think our faculty have been amazing.
If I can follow up real quick, Chad, forgetting for a moment that you're surrounded by us, do we ask enough about that type of stuff? The total person program didn't get talked about very much until Michael Sam happened. We don't talk about academic stuff until a kid's in trouble. What do we not talk about enough?
That's probably, I think, one of them, in my opinion, right, is that all of us recognize that the visibility of our kids and our program are pretty high. And so people are either going to be concerned about their performance or their off-the-field behavior or whatever that may be. Or if they have issues, all of a sudden they're ineligible academically, then it becomes like a big deal. So I just think that in college sport, I don't think just at Mizzou, I think in college sport, I think just not every day, but a little bit more attention, questions about how are you performing academically, tell us some of the results on that, good or bad, tell us about some of the other community involvement that your kids are, tell us some of the things you're trying to do to be able to grow these people and men and women making sound decisions off that football field or whatever. I just think those things just, you know, at certain junctures, to me, I think that the public is interested in that. I do. I think they're going to be interested about, you mentioned one of our former student athletes, okay, how, there was a huge story on that, right? So how did he grow as a person? How did the team grow on all that stuff? You would just hope that that one particular story wouldn't only be isolated. There'd be other opportunities to be able to see, you know, how you're doing academically. What kind of majors are those guys going through? What are their jobs like after they get out of school? How are they growing as men and women and stuff? Understanding that sport and performance, off the field behavior and other things like that, those are going to dominate. I get it. But I think just at some junctures, just once in a while. But I think that's the case for, I'm hoping they're doing that at Ohio State. They need to do more of that, I think. More of that at Illinois, Alabama, wherever.